episode of the Girl Have You Read podcast. We did miss last month. but it was kind of a busy time with both of us just kind of settling into projects and different things like that. But we're back and we are ready to go, especially after the energizing weekend we both had last weekend with the Indie Love Atlanta event hosted by Josh Renee Marks. It's a yearly event. This year was in Atlanta. Last year was in Los Angeles. Next year is going to be in New Orleans. I believe that's publicly available information.
I think so too.
I'm gonna edit that out. Yeah. we'll edit that out. I'm gonna confirm that that's public information so far. But Indie Love is always a good time. Always a good time. It was one of my first author events that I'd ever attended, period. And definitely like cream of the crop to me. You know, I can't speak for anyone else's experience, but Indie Love has always been a good time. Organizers and a team who really make you feel welcome, really make you feel well taken care of. Top-notch attendees.
Yes.
readers, just the overall energy of the event is always just, it feels almost like a family reunion.
It does.
I don't know if that's, okay, so I'm not crazy.
No, it's like, oh yeah, hey girl, like I remember seeing you at such and such event, or I remember seeing you, oh, what's your name? Oh, I know you from Facebook, or I know you from Twitter, or whatever. Like, yeah, it's, when you get to see the faces that you pretty much talk to more often than I think we even realize sometimes. Like, it's so exciting. Yeah.
And finally be able to, you know, like you said, put those faces with those names and be able to give and receive those hugs. It's just, it's very energizing, which I feel like it makes it even more appropriate that it happens in June, right in the middle of the year.
Yes.
So that it
is that recharge.
Exactly. It's a nice little boost right in the middle of the year. And I will say, I even like nothing against Atlanta in general, but I will say that for some reason this year, I even enjoyed like the city more than I typically do. Maybe
it's because you saw me more. That's why.
You know what? I'm going to go with that. But no, like I had great food, and you know, that's always, I'm a fat girl. So always like, no, like seriously, that is always like the hallmark of a good time to me was the food good. And there was good food, and like I've been to Atlanta as like a vacation spot before. And so I kind of felt like, okay, I've already done, you know, everything in Atlanta. We've done Stone Mountain. We've done the Coca-Cola factory. We've done the aquarium, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so I thought that I had quote unquote done everything like the, you know, like the tourist spots in Atlanta.
Right.
But then Mimi, she's also part, she's actually, if I can get my words out, she's actually part of the Indie Love team. But Mimi had posted in my reader group, she had posted about how the Botanical Gardens there was having like, had like an Alice in Wonderland installation thing. And I was like, okay, well, I know what I'm going to find myself doing. And so I was able to go and see that and sweat out all my makeup, but it was beautiful out there. It was really, really beautiful out there. Well worth the cost of admission. And like I said, good food. We ate at a local place, a local green Atlanta.
Yeah, shout out to Zach.
Them. Right. Black owned. And the owner, you know, was just a cool dude, just
super cool
in general. So shout out to them. If you're in Atlanta or visiting Atlanta, find yourself at local green. I'm trying to remember where else we ate. We ate at, not to, since this is apparently the foodie podcast now.
Just it in was case my you want to know.
Right. It was my 11-year anniversary. And so for that anniversary, we went to a place called Canoe, which is right on the Chattahoochee River. There's a place like out there for you to go, like have like a romantic walk or whatever. But it was like 11 o'clock at night. So we didn't do that. The food was banging, though. Like, the food was good. And we ate at a place for a breakfast place called Muchachos, which was breakfast tacos. That was good. Season 52, which is like one of my favorite restaurants. Anytime we go to a city that has one, I want to go. So we did that. I'm trying to remember the name of the place that we ate for breakfast the morning we left, because when you walk in, like, you have to pass by these parrots, like live parrots that are out there like shrieking and stuff. And the place is outdoor, but there's like these plastic panels, I guess, surrounding the place. And I like almost jumped out of my skin because I was sitting there and I forgot that this is just like flexible plastic, and a truck drove by in the plastic, like, you know, the effect, that wind effect of something driving by. Man, that plastic boat in, and I almost jumped out of my skin. What was the name of that place? Our Thomas Deluxe Grill. The food was the bomb. I had a seafood omelet, and yes, that was good. But anyway, enough about my foodie adventures. Indie Love Atlanta was a great time. Just like I said, being able to be around the readers, and the one complaint that I have, and it's the same complaint that I have with any event, is that I really wish that I had time to interface with my peers, know what I mean? Like being able to, like, people who I'm not necessarily like, let's go grab a bite. You know what I mean? Like, not necessarily like friends with, but people that I respect and people that I admire and people that I would like to, just interface with. Like I said, people that I would just like to talk to. And I mean, of course, that's what like meet and greets before the event are for. But I'm just saying, just in general, like that would be my only, I guess, wish list item, is that
every time
we had
I think
time
about,
to do
like,
that.
Trying to get around to other people's tables, something happens. Every single time. And then by the time the event is actually over, like, you're cleaning up, everybody else is cleaning up, some people have kind of left already, and then like trying to figure out post event plans, and so it's always a little too hectic to do it then too. But I agree with that.
We'll have to figure that out. Even though, like I said, this is a problem that's been solved already, and I didn't take advantage of the solving. But just in general, it's always, I'm just grateful that those spaces exist, for us, because, and this is one of our topics for later in the show as well, but there has not always been space made for us as indies, and our community had to kind of carve this out. We had to kind of carve this out for ourselves. And I'm grateful for people like Jazz, who saw the need, you know what I mean? She saw what was out there, saw the deficiency that was there, and was willing to step up and create something to fill that void and fill that space. And so, like, eternally grateful to her for being willing and not, I'm trying to figure out how to say this, and not being like egotistical about it. You know what I mean? Like, don't get me wrong. I love confidence. What I mean? And so it's not about that, but I just feel like sometimes for people, they start to feel like it's more about like fame or, and I even feel weird using that word, because again, nothing against, nothing against that, but it's like, it's clear that she is in this because she cares about the community.
Yes.
Like, this is not just like an attention grab for her. Mm-hmm, she mm-hmm. cares about us. And I feel like Absolutely. That's very clear in the care that she takes when it comes to this event and the feeling that you get, you know, as one of the attending authors and as one of the attendees, you know, as the readers. I think you feel it when you walk into the event. Like, mm-hmm. you don't feel like it's about, look at me, look at me, look at me.
Right.
It's about the book. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. just yeah, shout out to her.
Shout out. That's what, like, she's still like amazing. Like, talk your, yeah, you can talk it, Josh. Please do. When if you feel the need, please do, because you deserve all the things for putting on such an amazing event and having such an amazing team that makes everything move seamlessly.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But speaking of events, we do have our own, and we do have a date for real. That, well, we had a date. I think we had a date. But we
yeah, we talked about it.
Yeah.
You laughed at me.
Oh, yeah, because you're going to say. But we do have an official location. We will be in St. Louis, which it makes me want to sing.
It's the Midwest, like, Swing.
Yeah. Like, one of them, so they like, you can find me in St. Louis. I don't know. I think it might be Murphy Lee and them, but we'll be in St. Louis April 4th, 2020. Put it on your calendar.
I'm excited too, because it's so funny, because my family visited St. Louis, and this was part of why my family visited St. Louis, was so that we could go do a little bit of scoping out of the city, make sure the food was right, you know
important things.
But I actually forgot my point. What was
Take your time, Pastor. Take your time.
Oh, no, that was my point. That was my point. That my family, you know, we went, and before we went, like, when we would tell people, like, locally, when we would tell people that we were going to St. Louis, you know, some people are like, St. Louis, there's nothing in St. Louis. Like, or not even just that, but you better watch out, you know, just different things like that. And I kind of hate that. It's like, on one hand, I understand it. You know, some cities have a reputation for being dangerous. I live very close to supposedly one of the most dangerous cities in America, Little Rock, Arkansas, mm-hmm. for some odd reason to me.
It's always
nuts to me that Little Rock ends up on these most dangerous lists, because I'm like, huh? But, you know, maybe I'm just sheltered. Anyway, it was basically the gist of it was that there's nothing in Little Rock but people to rob you or something like that was really the vibe that was given. And then we get to St. Louis, and St. Louis is freaking beautiful. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. And I mean, I will give it to them that maybe this is due to gentrification. And we actually were, we actually did talk to someone who, you know, who was talking about how Black people are getting pushed out, and how just the landscape of downtown St. Louis has changed so much, you know, once the Panera Bread and, well, not Panera Bread, because it's
the
actually
Starbucks and the
it's actually
studio.
Started as St. Louis Bread Company or something like that. Like, that was, that's a little tidbit. That was a weird little tidbit I noticed, because I was like, that's like the same colors and logo and stuff as Panera, but that don't say Panera. But yeah, you know, once the Starbucks and the yoga studios and stuff comes in, the Black people start getting pushed out. And he was talking to us about all of that, and I could see it. I could definitely see it. But just generally speaking, you know, St. Louis is a beautiful city, and I would love to be able to, you know, maybe help change the reputation, I guess. I don't know if that's not even necessarily help change the reputation, help change the perception of
but
it
just,
in people's minds.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
you know, like St. Louis,
see it for
is,
what it is instead of seeing it from afar.
Right,
you like, just have to experience things.
St. Louis has a ton of things to do. Really good food. Really good food. So just in general, I think that we're going to have a good time in St. Louis. And it was on the list of, I'm trying to remember how many cities we were we were debating between. I know we kind of looked at Chicago. We kind of looked at OKC. We looked at going back to Texas again, because that's what everybody asks for. A lot of people ask for us to return to Texas. Always get a lot of requests for the DMV area, but we're kind of trying to keep it somewhat local for now. And St. Louis just seemed like a good pick. It's pretty central for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's a nice city. It really is a nice city. So I think we're going to have a good time.
It will be a good time.
And our invites have gone out.
Yes. So send up a prayer that everybody says yes.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to, like, this is really going to be a bomb list. If everybody that we ask says yes, assuming, this is really going to be a bomb list. So I'm excited about it. And I think readers are going to be excited about it, too.
Our actual topic of the day is not book events or restaurants. First, we had friend of the show, Nicole Falls. I feel like she gets mentioned every episode.
Always.
But she was talking about, or asking us, I guess, how the landscape has changed for indies from when we started. And it's funny because we were actually having a conversation. We were in Atlanta about how long we both kind of been in the game, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, how, in what ways would you say it has changed since you got in the game back in, wait, was it 2013 for you?
2013.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was actually one of the questions from my panel had this question too at Indie Love. I know everybody, each set of people had different questions, but mm-hmm. this was one of our questions in my particular panel group at Indie Love as well. And I was actually talking about this with another friend last night, how I'm going to use a word that I absolutely do not want it to be interpreted as shade, because I think it's a good thing. I think it's easier for people to start now. Mm-hmm. I think that it's a lot friendlier landscape for indies than it was when I started in 2013. You basically had to beg people to give you any attention back then, because indies were not where it was. Indies were seen as lesser than, even more than they still are to some degree. Mm-hmm. But especially back then, it was kind of like, oh, you're only indie because you couldn't hack it in, mm-hmm. you know, a traditional publishing landscape. You couldn't, you know, you were only indie because you weren't good enough. And so you had to write your own stuff and publish it. And that was a hard stigma to get past. Like, that was a really hard stigma to get past. And I feel like it's a stigma that was perpetuated, I think, in large part by other traditionally published authors. Mm-hmm. And even still now, which is really weird to me, because I feel like in traditional publishing, it's like, if I've never been in traditional publishing, never seriously pursued traditional publishing, and I can see how hostile it is for a Black woman who wants to write Black characters in love with each other, if I can see that and I'm not even in it, how are you so blind to it if you're in it? And then treat the people who subverted that as if we're like, we get treated like we're the enemy, or we get treated like we're not good enough, or treated like we're, you know, the redheaded stepchild. When, as I mentioned at Indie Love, I know so many readers who won't even pick up a traditionally published mm-hmm. romance anymore.
And I'm one of them. Being completely honest, like, I can't tell you the last time I read something that was traditionally published. And I used to be the one, you know, in Walmart, in Borders, in Barnes & Noble, whatever, like, going for those books. And now it's like, no thanks. No thanks.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, and I 2 years ago, I feel like I was a lot saltier about this than I am now. Now I'm just like, you really are blind You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. you really have to be not wanting to pay attention if you don't see the way that indie authors, self-published authors, are changing this game. And mm-hmm. it's strange to me. Like, it is honestly strange to me that indies, and I cannot be clear enough that it's not about me, because I know, like, everybody don't like me, and that's fine. It's not about me, but it's frustrating to me that other indies who are out here writing, like, the dopest of work don't get more attention from people who claim to be about the culture, who claim mm-hmm. to be all for, you know, Black women really do read, and Black women do this and Black women do that in terms of literature. And yet you're ignoring the part of that industry that is making the most, that's we're the ones making the most noise. We're mm-hmm. the ones that are out mm-hmm. here really doing this. And it's frustrating, but at the same time, it's like, I hate to say this, because again, I don't want to speak for everyone, but it's like, I don't even like need that anymore. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, like I said, 2 years ago, like, I was very on fire about this. Mm-hmm. And now I just kind of think it's sad. Like, I kind of feel like, right. okay, that's really your loss. Mm-hmm. But I know, but at the same time, I still want it for the others.
Right.
You know what I right. mean? Just mm-hmm. because I don't care, just because it's not important to me, doesn't make it not important to anyone else. And mm-hmm. so from that standpoint, it's still frustrating. Like, how dare you not give blank, blank, blank and mm-hmm. blank her props? Like, are yeah. you crazy? Have you lost your mind? You know, I guess that kind of comes in with the good and bad of it. It's like, at this point now, I'm just trying to build as much as I can, and not just for me, but for this community. And that kind of comes into this whole girl, have you read thing, girl, have you met thing as a whole. Like, me and my friend, just the two of us to start with, you know, we've always had help. We've always had support from peers, but are you like, I'm doing this for everybody except me.
Right.
I never post myself mm-hmm. on Girl Have You Read or anything like that.
Right.
You know what I mean? When y'all see Christina posted on Girl Have You Read pages, it's because Alex or Bria did it. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. because it's not about me. It's about this community, and it's about building us up. And I have a conscience for that, you know, because I know what this thing looked like when we started. I know what it was like when we started. I know what it was like to wish somebody would retweet you, to wish mm-hmm. somebody would share your work, to wish somebody would review your work, to wish you could get into people's email inboxes with, you know, with a promotion for what you were doing. And so right. I teamed up and I made it happen. And we're putting in the work now to continue growing with it. Girl Have You Met grows every year. There's things that we can't talk about publicly yet, but you know how there are things going on behind the scenes that we're still like we are. This is a steadily changing landscape. Mm-hmm. And Girl Have You Read, we're doing our very best to do as much as we can
right,
to help change mm-hmm. this landscape.
Yeah. And it's weird because I think about like when I first started and I'm like, well, I really just like not like so tunnel vision or like so naive to like how traditionally, like, you know, how the traditional mainstream industry felt about indies. Cause I feel like I just remember being so focused on my own work and on my own storytelling that it was like, I don't really care what y'all got going on. Cause there would be so many different like waves of topics that happened in like Romancelandia. And uh-huh. I wouldn't know about it until, you know, it was brought to me. It wasn't like I just came across any of it. Cause I feel like I don't really like follow a lot of those people. I really don't, uh-huh. you know, pay attention to their topics because it just takes away from what I'm actually here to do, and that's to tell a good story and to get those stories to the people that are actually going to read it and not uh-huh. to the people that, you know, don't want to pay me any mind anyway.
And that's really where it should be. Like, that's really where it should be. But I feel like at first, I thought that I was part of that. You know what I mean? I thought that those were my peers. We're all Black women. We're all out here trying to do this. We're all out here trying to, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so you think this is your community, and then you find out, nah, this ain't for you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a learning experience, definitely. It was definitely a learning experience. But I think that you know, and just for the record, she's not, you know, she's not making that up. Like, that is literally how she has always been. Like, that's like for real. Like, she's not just trying to sound tough or whatever. That really is where she's always been with it. And it's honestly something that I've admired, because it took me time to come there. Like, I was, when it came to my work, I was always about the work. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It didn't, you know, nothing was going to sway that. Nothing mattered when it came to that. Like, I was always about the work. But even once we started Girl Have You Met, like, if you listen, Girl Have You Read, like, if you listen to the early podcast episodes, if you look at the, you know, the early content, we were a lot, there was a lot more traditionally published stuff. We were a lot more, you know, I don't want to say inclusive, because we didn't stop. You know, that hand has always been extended, you know, from our side, you know. But whatever it was, you know, I don't want to say it changed, but I feel like my eyes opened, you know, to really, and you just kind of have to realize that everybody, all your skin folks ain't your kin folks, you know, basically. And so that was kind of a tough lesson to learn, that this is actually not my community. I'm going to have to, you know, I'm going to have to self-select out of some of this negativity and some of this drama, because that's like so far from my energy and what I want to be around. And like you said, you know, all that Romancelandia stuff and all of that, I don't like the only time I see it is when someone retweets it onto my timeline, and I honestly muted and unfollowed most of those people. So now when I see it, I'm like, come on, please. I like you. I don't want to, I don't want you to not be on my timeline, but I don't want to see this stuff, because it literally has nothing to do with me. And it only has nothing to do with me because that was the way that they made it. You know what I mean? Like, it would, you know me, I'd be ready to fight the power with you and, you know, sign your petitions and all of that. I'm ready. Like, let's make a movement. Let's get behind it. But it's like, I can't fight for you when it's not time to fight. You treat me like I'm the redheaded stepchild, not even the stepchild, the outside child. we Indy's the side baby. Like, nah, I'm good on that. Y'all have your battles, and we'll be over here working.
And so I'm when sitting it really here comes think, down yeah, to it. I'm sitting here thinking about it. And I'm wondering if, because you were, your first book came out maybe like a year and a half, roughly, before mine. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, did some of your experience kind of help filter that part of it out for me? Like, you went through it, and so you were already kind of building, you know, this alternate community, so that people like me and other people that came up after you didn't have to deal with that.
That could be it, but I don't know. It's like, that could be it, but at the same time, I don't know, because I feel like I tried to be very careful, because I didn't want to unduly influence you.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I was like, because I know there's things that I didn't even tell you about until like way later, and you were like, really? Like, that happened? Like, seriously? And I was like, yeah, you know, this happened because I didn't want to, like, I really tried to let people have their own experience with people. And so even when I have like, and that's not to say that I've had just like a ton of negative experiences with people, because I don't bother anybody. So, so it's not really room for a lot of that. You know, my rants are usually pretty general, but I feel like I tried to not unduly influence you, but at the same time, I do feel like
you saved me a lot of time.
Right.
You saved me a lot of energy towards things that I didn't need to put any energy towards.
Yeah, I feel like I was definitely don't bother with that.
Let me turn you just a little bit.
Go this way.
If you want to. Yeah, but turn a little bit this way so you're not wasting the time that I already did with energy towards things like that.
Yeah, I can see that. That I can definitely see. I can definitely see that because, you know, there's things that I did or tried to do early on that just honestly didn't work. Like the Facebook groups and stuff full of authors, the groups, the promo groups and different things like that. And that's not to say that those things don't work or anything. It's just to say that those things don't work for me. Even though I will say that a Facebook group, well, no, this Facebook group had authors and readers. Well, no. We were in a Facebook group that had authors and readers. And then we were in a Facebook group that was only for authors. And that's actually how I met Love. And so I won't say that they weren't, you know, that they didn't have their own benefit, but just as like a promotional tool, I'm not sure about the benefit of that because this is something that I see or used to see on Twitter a lot. And even in these groups as well, I feel like sometimes when struggling, like when you're first starting out, you're struggling, you're trying to gain that foothold, you're trying to do this, you're trying to do that. Or you're starting out, you're not as confident quite yet in your work. I feel like when those vibes get together, I feel like it can be more detrimental than anything. It's like, yes, there's something to be said for finding out that, you know, that the way that you're feeling about your work or the way that you're feeling about marketing or the way that you're feeling about your sales, et cetera, et cetera. There's definitely something to be said for knowing that you're not alone, but there's also this thing that the circle of negativity, I guess that kind of the circle of negativity thing that kind of happens that is not helpful, you know, especially not for someone just starting out, especially not for someone who is already not feeling that confident or really feeling uncertain or even feeling broken. Yeah. Like I'll see things like, you know, nobody's first draft looks good. Everybody's first draft is trash. And I see stuff like that and it's like, okay, sure, you know, sure. Maybe that's your reality. But that's also not some people's reality. That's also not a lot of people's reality. And when you get into stuff like that, you see stuff like that, and maybe your first draft isn't trash, but everybody's first draft is trash. And so you go through and you start making these changes, you start picking it apart, and all of a sudden it's not what you started with anymore because you're trying to follow this rule and follow that rule and trying to fit this mold and trying to fit that mold. And you end up sanitizing what you started with because you saw all first drafts are trash. You know what I mean? And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that, you know, that everybody's going to start out perfect because everybody grows as an author. And I don't know. I feel like you have to be, I feel like you got to be willing to take a few more L's than trying to make this thing perfect because it's going to be what it is. You're not going to, I've never read a book that I know that the author spent time and energy and years picking apart that didn't feel like it had been picked apart for years. And I just always wonder, like, if they had just put out what they first wrote, and I'm not saying, you know, with no editing, that's not what I'm talking about. But if they had went with their gut, went with that first, that raw storytelling and that energy that they first had, I wonder how much different this could look. But I mm-hmm. think that's another symptom of traditional publishing. Yeah. Like you're used uh-huh. to an editor and another editor and a lawyer and another editor, you know, going behind you and picking apart your work to where it looks a certain way, to where it looks this homogenous, mainstream appealing way. Mm-hmm. And people see that and think that that's what it's supposed to look like. Right. And I just,
I don't know, but like we talked about in Atlanta, it's been cool to watch Girl Have You Read grow and to watch more indie authors come in and have a place to go, mm-hmm. like where they know they can get some support and get some love and get some shout outs and get those retweets and spotlights and those kind of things that you talked about. It's been fun to watch that develop, because like you said, when we came up, we didn't have that. Like, that's why we made it, because mm-hmm. it didn't exist. There wasn't a solid platform for
exactly
Black romance. So
yeah, and I think that's another thing that frustrated me early on is with Girl Have You Read, is like there was no solid platform for Black romance. Like there were places who talked about, you know, being for Black women, where you could find Black characters, you know, women of color, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I would never see books that really featured Black love at the center. Like, I would never see that. It would always be, I'm sorry if this is offensive. 2 years ago, I wouldn't have been sorry if this was today, I'm sorry, I guess, but it was always books with white men on the cover, and uh-huh. I'm like, I don't feel represented by that. There are plenty of women around the world who do, and I'm grateful for them to have that type of representation, because I think it's important for all of us to be able to see ourselves. I mm-hmm. do think that's important, but I don't see myself in that.
Right.
I don't feel represented by that, mm-hmm. and so the goal for us when we started this was to have a place where we felt represented. The love that we have in our lives, the love that we write about in our books, the love that we, you know, that we want to share and show support for, and what we wanted to see. And that wasn't kind of largely, it wasn't well received. It wasn't that well received in the beginning, but I'm so glad that as these years have gone on and as we've kind of cemented ourselves, I don't care who receives it well anymore, because mm-hmm. these readers receive it well.
Exactly.
That mailing list full of people receives it well. Mm-hmm. These authors who need a place for them, for just them, yep. they receive it well. And so it's kind of like, and I think back on the things that used to frustrate and bother me, and I'm like, girl, you needed some business, because because really, you really let that bother you? Like, you really let that? And I mean, don't get me wrong, it was still annoying. Like, it was definitely still mm-hmm. annoying, especially when it came from Black women. Like, you don't see the value in having a place that's specifically for Black romance. This is not divisive. This is as inclusive as we could possibly get. Mm-hmm. Something
I know exactly what
us.
You're talking about.
Like, you can be gay, you can be straight, you can be bi, you can be poly, you can be trans, you can be all across the spectrum of, you know, of diversity of sexuality. I'm sure that I'm not saying that right now. I for real apologize if I'm not now mm-hmm. that's a real apology if I'm not saying it right. But y'all get what I'm saying. Like, you can be any of those things. Just be Black. As long as both of your main characters, or all three, or all 15, or
whatever, yeah.
As long as y'all identify as Black, bring it on. Mm-hmm. Come on. And I feel like Girl Have You Read is an important space for that. And like, we're talking about landscape. Like I said, like, I feel like it's more, I don't know, I feel like it's more embraced now than it was back when we first started. Because Girl Have You Read, this is like year 5 or something like
which
that.
Which is crazy to think about, yeah. So speaking of how we like our characters at Girl Have You Read, recently on my Facebook page, I've been asking like different questions every week. And one of the questions I asked was about character visuals. And the question said, uh-huh. Do you like character visuals or do you prefer making your own visual up in your head as you're reading based on the description? And basically the answer that I got was like all of it. Like, yes. Yes. So I thought it would be fun for us to talk about that a little bit from both the author perspective and the reader's perspective. Because I know from the author's perspective, like I'll search high and low for like what I'm looking for, but sometimes I don't always find what I'm looking for. Uh-huh. And so that could be like a search on Pinterest, a search on Instagram, a search on Twitter sometimes. If I'm looking for like an athlete or something more specific for like body type purposes, I'll do like a Google search. But I'm not always like showing people uh-huh. like if this is what's in my head, but I don't want to show people. So what is it like for you with character visuals?
I do spend time, like you said, on Pinterest and Instagram, et cetera, trying to find somebody who fits what I have in my head. I think I do that more for characters who have like some type of unique quality or something like that. And mm-hmm, it's really mostly mm-hmm. so that I can just kind of cement it in my head. Like for Brittany, for example, who Brittany, I haven't written her book yet. I've started and stopped. But Brittany has vitiligo. And it's like I had a mental image in my head, but I needed to like see someone who just really gave me Brittany, mm-hmm. if that makes sense mm-hmm. at all. Like I needed that face in my head. Or for example, someone who might have like a scar in a certain place, or someone mm-hmm. who might have unique, like their coloring is unique. Like if they're, you know, a black woman with red hair and freckles, you know, I might like need to see that. Like it might come to me as part of my character, but I still need to like see it with my uh-huh. eyes, and not just in my mental, not just a mental image of it, but really need to see it with my eyes mm-hmm. in order to make it happen.
So would you say that's how it plays a role in the writing process in terms of just being able to see it so that when you do sit down to the doc, that's like cemented in your head?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can definitely tell. It's actually something that I've been telling myself to start doing for every character because I feel like it makes them more vivid in my head. Mm-hmm. It's like when you see it in your head, it's like it's almost kind of hazy. But then when you have like that firm visual, it just makes it so much more vivid, so much more clear, so that when mm-hmm. you're describing these things, describing their facial expressions, different things like that, it just makes it a lot more solid for you when you're mm-hmm. going through that writing process.
So for me, this is gonna sound so weird, but like sometimes when I get stuck like writing, I just for whatever reason, like the story flow just comes to halt, and I'll like open the character visual and I'll just be looking at them like, okay, like what are y'all doing? Or like sometimes like the book playlist will be playing in the background and I'm uh-huh. just looking at y'all like, okay, like what's about to happen? Like, give me something.
That actually sounds perfect. And now you have me thinking because I'm getting ready to start writing again after my kids have been talking. I've talked about this on the podcast before too. I'm positive because they've been asking mm-hmm. for like 3 or 4 years. They want me to write. They want to write a kid's book. They want me to write the kid's book mm-hmm. with them. Mm-hmm. And I keep saying, this summer. And I've been saying this summer for like 4 years. And so we're finally going to do it. And I write it. Dude, I know this is like completely off topic, but writing a kid's book is hard.
It's
like different. Making it uh-huh. make sense, making it be interesting without, and like kind of turning some of your vocabulary off. I'm not going to dumb it down. I'm not going to do that because I know for the most part, it'll be adults reading this to kids
right.
anyway, but yeah. But anyway, once I finish this, I'm going to be going into my next writing project. And it's like, I see things happening, but there's been like a little bit of a mental block for me. And I think that part of that is because I have not sat down and found those character visuals. Mm-hmm. And what you said about the playlist, because I do have a playlist. I have a playlist because I was supposed to write this you know, I first conceptualized this back in like March or something like that, on that long drive home from Chicago, from Book Euphoria. But I'm thinking now, you know, maybe I might spend some time with my playlist going while I'm looking for these character visuals, and maybe that will give me what I need. So thank you for that, because that's
well, yeah. Good. I'm glad you did. Well, maybe that's not weird to you because you're right. But like, if somebody like, it's, I feel like if like Dante walked in and just saw me staring at these strangers with like romantic music playing, he'd be like, "What is wrong?
What is happening right now?"
Yeah, but that's something I do. But something that was brought up a lot in readers' responses was how like they'll kind of use the cover image to give them an idea of what the character looks like, but they like to create one on their own too. But I know for us, like sometimes the cover image, it just kind of depends on what we can find to best fit. And it might not always be exactly, but I know for you, you've done like custom shoots and stuff like that. So those are usually a lot more accurate than like regular stock photos.
Yeah. I'm not putting somebody on a cover unless they look like the character that I intended them to look like.
Like their face, like their
face. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like their full face is not going on my cover unless that's who, you know, unless they fit what I, you know, what I see for the character. And like you said, with the custom shoots, it makes it a little easier because you see all these images and you're like, oh yes. And you're able to tell the photographer, yes, him or her. But that's why, you know, a lot of covers only have like a partial face, like, yeah, this is the right jawline, but the rest of her face, nah, you know, or, or, you know, the beard works, but nothing else, you know, and so you just use that particular part or whatever. But yeah, I really don't like for, I feel like as part of this whole representation thing that's really important to me, I like to now you're talking about stuff that sounds crazy, this is gonna sound crazy, if I like just wrote like a light-skinned heroine, I don't like to write another one right behind her. Or and that might factor into what I write next, because I always have, you know, kind of a pool of projects to choose from. And it's, I promise this is not just me being colorist. It's because if a heroine has, like, I wrote a whole lot of, like, in 2018, I wrote a whole lot of heroines whose names started with A. And I don't know if it's just because I went on the baby name website and count the name, and I just kept stopping in the A's because there were so many options. But I'm, like, I'm really very resistant to writing another heroine with a name that starts with A. Like, it's just different little things like that. Mm-hmm. But the other reason for that is because I don't want all my covers to look the same.
Right.
I don't want, you know, I don't want anybody to look at, you know, to look at, like, if they laid out all my covers, which now I kind of want to do.
me and you both. You just gave me the idea.
If they laid out all my covers and saw, they're like, oh, CCJ only writes dark-skinned girls. Like, don't get me wrong. I love a dark-skinned heroine, you know, because I feel like, yeah, like, we're beautiful too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But we're not, you know, all Black women are not dark-skinned, you know, and so I try to be, and that's not to say that I have, like, a preference. I want to be clear about that, you know. Whatever skin tone she is, that's going to be the skin tone that she is when she comes to me, and I'm not going to change that. Mm-hmm. I just might not write her yet, you know. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm not as picky about the heroes, but I don't have very many light-skinned heroes. Like, I feel like if I was to, like, lay them out, probably about 50% dark skin, then about 25 medium, then about 25 like light skin. Mm-hmm. This is really weird to think about. Like, it's really,
now you have me thinking about it too. Like,
yeah, like I'm running through it in my head. But no, I just like to, I like to represent all of us. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's not about, I feel like my heroines are a lot more diverse in skin tone than my heroes are. They're really diverse in body type. In my head, at least, and this is something that I actually like, I see questions about, and I get questions about plus size heroines, and that brings me to this question that's always in my mind of whether or not that's like a personal problem. That sounds so mean, and it's really not how I mean it, but it's like, I might see a heroine in my head, like sometimes she might be, yes, she might be slim, but then sometimes she's a thick girl, but I may not make like a big deal of it. You know what I mean? Like she's just a woman, you know, she's a woman that the hero finds attractive. Especially when it comes to Black women, because we definitely come in all sizes, and our men find us attractive in all sizes. In my experience. And so it's just kind of like, is it that you're used to only women of a certain size being described as attractive? And so you assume that because I call this woman attractive, because the hero thinks she's attractive, or because the hero picks her up, you know, are you assuming that she's slim? Because,
that's a good point.
You know, like, you get what I'm saying? Like, and I will say that it is harder to find, it's definitely harder to find plus size stock photos.
Oh yeah.
Of women who are not making like these like ridiculous expressions and
super goofy
stuff like that. Like
that's
an issue with Black stock photos in general. That's why I'm glad for people like Portia from Brown Stock, who are helping to get us something else other than these goofy smiles and different, you know, different stuff like that. I'm just grateful. But yeah, I to come back to the actual question, I do like for my visuals, like what I have in my head to match the cover image. And if it doesn't, it's not going to be on my cover. Personally,
that's fair. So what about as a reader, even though allegedly we don't read anymore? No, I have been trying to read stuff, but it's just, I just, when I'm in the project, it can't happen as much. But as readers, do you want the visual or not? Nah? Because I know for me, like, if I see it before I start reading, like this person is a part of the promotional stuff and things like that, then that's who I'm reading with in my head. But if I read the book and then I see the visual afterwards, it rarely ever matches what I, like, grew attracted to as I read the book.
I agree with that, because I feel like, not everybody, well, everybody doesn't have the same taste, right? You know what I mean? And so I will never forget reading, I'm not going to say who it was either, but she's an older author, an older Black woman author. And I remember reading her book, and I loved the book. I absolutely loved the book, loved the hero, you know. And then there was one point in the book where she mentioned this specific celebrity that he looked like. And I didn't know who this celebrity was, and so I had to Google him. I had to look him up. It ruined, ruined that book for me. Like, and I don't mean he just, oh, he's not as fine as what I had in my head. Like, no. This motherfucker was like, girl, are you blind?
But that's the point, though, is that, like, if something is presented, then it's like you start, you know, your whole gaze changes rather than just, like, having this character in your head based off how they were described, right, and then letting that carry you through.
I want to say that I would have wanted to see that visual first, but I wouldn't have read
the book, right? Because it would be like, visual first. Yeah.
So, I mean, I almost want to say maybe run that by a couple of friends first before, like if it's not somebody that's, like, universally fine, like Morris Chestnut, or, you know what I mean? Like, run that by somebody first to make sure that that's just not your, you know. But in general, with that said, I absolutely believe in respecting the author's vision for what their characters looks like. And so if the author presents a visual, that's what it looks like. You know, it doesn't matter what, you know, what I made up in my head. If the author presents a visual, that's what it looks like. But, you know, there have been times where I had something in my head, and then I saw, like I said, I saw the author say, oh, this is him. And I'm like, oh, no, that is not at all. That's not at all what I thought. But you want to know something that I have realized? We're coming back around to this skin tone conversation. And I see it a lot. Like, I saw somebody there, you know, there's always debate about one thing or another on Twitter. I saw a debate about whether or not Beyonce was light-skinned, whether or not Meg Thee Stallion was light-skinned. And in my head, I'm like, they're both literally light brown. Like, if we like if we held up the color spectrum of, like, light brown, brown, and dark brown, you know.
They're a lighter brown, yeah.
Yeah, they're light-skinned. And the point, and I mean, I don't care to argue about whether or not those women are light skin. My point is that I say someone is this skin tone, and then I present the visual, and this is what they look like. You might be like, wait a minute, I thought she said he was, you know, I thought she said he was this color, but it's more like this color to me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that that plays a part in it, too. These words that we use that may not be necessarily universal, like mahogany. If I say mahogany, everybody is probably going to call the same thing to mind. You know, if I say peanut butter, everybody knows peanut butter, don't waver. Yeah. Peanut butter is peanut butter. Mm-hmm. But almond, for example, like, okay, are you talking about, like, the bleached toasted almonds? Or are you talking about, like, you know, the shell of the almond? Or are you talking about how when you open the shell, an almond is like a darker, you know, it's like a darker brown color, you know, whereas, you know, when I think almond, I might, like, for me personally, when I think almond, it calls to mind the lighter color. Like, if you bought a bag,
which is interesting, know, because it comes, like, the darker color comes to me.
Right. And that never occurred to me until the Martin episode. Well, you saw almondy. Like, I'm like, Martin? Like, almondy? And then I had to think about it, like, oh, you know, like, yeah, I could see that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But if I bought almonds to put in some cookies or something, which, gross, ew. they would be like that lighter. It would be like a bleached almond, like a bleached roasted almond. And so,
which, speaking of this, let's just take a pause for a second. Why do food, like, references get such a bad rap when it comes to skin tone?
Do not even get me 0%.
Like, I've seen that, like, that of all the things from Romancelandia that I see, that's one of them that I've seen, that, oh, why are all, you know, people of color always referenced with food? It's like, well, you know what, I like food, and I typically like all these flavors, so why is this an issue?
Right, and my thing is, like, okay, almond, okay, fine, not a great example, but if I say brown sugar, you know exactly what color I mean. Mm-hmm. But if I say light brown, that could be anything. It could be, yeah. If I say any of these other obscure words that nobody knows what I'm talking about.
I look at the little charts of different shades and try to figure out which one matches.
And none of those words make sense.
Yeah. So,
like, We use the food words because they are universally recognized, for one. The only reason people have a problem with it is because, I guess, white people were using it and, like, don't fetishize me. But listen, when I'm talking to my homegirls, when I'm talking to my friends, and I'm describing somebody or describing something, and if it comes time to describe their skin color, I'm probably going to use a food word. And I write like I'm talking to my homegirls. So guess what these books are going to get? They're going to get the food descriptions. Like,
that is what you were talking about, all the different, I'm like, why? Like, why was that ever an issue? I don't understand. If that's an issue with you, let me know.
I don't understand it.
And not on social media, though.
And people say stuff like, it's so cliche. It's so, like, okay, show me a better way. Show me a better, a logically better way, but they never can.
It's always what's wrong, but never a solution.
Right. And girl, that's a word right there. That's a word right there. But I told myself I was ranting too much, and this is not, I give it up. I was off rant.
That's one worth having for me and my food colored sisters and brothers.
I swear it is a thing that I swear I don't understand. I swear I just do not get it. I almost understand feeling icky about it from white authors, like almost understand that. And almost, because that doesn't curl all the way over for me either. Like it's literally like it's literally a descriptive word. But I mean, there are descriptive words that are actually insulting, but words are not. To me, that's to me personally. But when it comes from like Black people critiquing Black art, I'm just looking upside your head, like, girl,
just finding something to be wrong, because this is not wrong. It's just not.
It's just right. I don't get. It's like you're complaining about the use of caramel, but I bet you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Right.
But if I say, oh, his skin was the color of teak wood. Teak wood is not light, so that was a bad example. But I feel like that's obscure knowledge. Like, not everybody knows what it color is. Teak I'm like, is. Like, that, which is my point. You know what I mean? Like, oh, he was the color of parchment. He was the color of freshly roasted wheat. Girl, well, what are you talking about?
You know what? Like, I feel like food really introduces somebody in a warmer light. Because when you just
say parchment, with that.
Like, ew. Like,
right.
Even if there's nothing wrong with the color, but it's just like, I don't want to.
But when I say caramel, you're like,
ooh, yeah.
Yes. Yes, that. Give me more of this.
Over here. Like,
but nah, I'm not with the problem with using food words, and I'm gonna continue to use food words, and maybe people roll their eyes whenever they see them, and that's okay. That's fine. Everybody has their, you know, their different view of things. But over here over here, I'm not gonna be using amber. Well, I use amber for eye color. I'm not gonna use amber for skin, though. And I don't know.
Well, and it's such a like a small detail. It's not like you have to say it over and over again. Like, you usually give that like once, maybe twice, and then it's never even spoken about again. So the things we think about.
Yeah, always.
But yeah, character visuals, some people like them, some people prefer their own. If you follow Love Belvin on social media, you will see how passionate some people are about what characters look like and what they what characters don't look like. Not what they look like, what they don't look like.
Yes. And you want to know something, though? Like, some, like, you know, I've read like 98% of Love's catalog. And so I'll see some of the people that were presented, and I'll see that they got an overwhelming no. And I'm like, but it's an exact description. Like, this person fits this description exactly. But what it really is I don't think he's fine enough.
Yeah, I don't think he's attractive.
It's really what it is, which is fair, you know, which is fair. If we're asking opinions, you know, you tell your honest opinion. But it's just funny to me how different, like, how differently these same words might hit people in a different way.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
Because I'm thinking about this book that I read like a while back, and like the hero was described as being as this very specific height and this very specific weight. She didn't give a body type. She gave a specific weight. And I'm like, okay, my husband is that height. And if I took 50 pounds off of him, there is no way I could describe him as solid or as, you know, buff. You know what I mean? Like, there's no way. And so you just think about, like, what does buff mean to everybody? What does slender mean to everybody? What does thick mean to everybody? And that kind of goes back into the thing of, you know, of the plus size heroine. Like, because I kept getting asked that question, I feel like I started making it more clear than I had before when I was writing a heroine who was plus size, because I understand, you know, as a plus size woman, you know, I understand not, I guess, not feeling represented or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I tried to, like, whenever I was writing a heroine who was, like, specifically that, and I don't mean that she was, you know, a 14, because that is the average size woman, and, you know, that's the average size woman, I'm, you know, but when she's, you know, like, very firmly into that plus size designation, I try to make it clear, just so that, you know, we see, you know, that, hey, you know, we're here, we're out here, et cetera, et cetera. But for me, I never, like, I saw something in Why Are Heroines in Romance Always a Size Zero? And I'm like, who writes a size zero, sis? I mean, nothing against a size zero, but that ain't what I had in mind. And it's like, just because it's almost as if you don't specify, that's the assumption. And I'm like, who built that assumption? And why do you come into my work with that assumption about what the character looks like? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I feel like women's bodies are so, like, even when they have the, like, they have the same, like, two people could be the same weight and look totally different. People can wear the same size clothes and still look totally different. And so given some of those descriptors, you know, more for women, I feel like more so for women than men, it's like, even if I do say it, like, you're gonna see something different.
Think something different, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's true. As always, we have had a good time.
Which is funny, because we did not have a... Never mind.
Yeah, keep that to yourself. All right, we are going to go ahead and wrap this up. And soon, we are going to have a little bit of an interesting variation on the podcast, kind of, sort of, a little bit of an interesting variation on the podcast for you guys. Very short format to help introduce you to some more of the authors in our community. Mm-hmm. So be on the lookout for that. And as always, thank you guys for listening, and bye.